शांति शांति शांति। ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so this section means the overall section is civics, so it's all the Vedic cultural concepts. So the so that includes the Puranas, the Upapuranas, the Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, Niti. So we're starting with Dharma because that gives one an understanding of the rules or how it functions, what actually makes it work. So then in here, then in the 12 chapters, so the first one is the introduction, the last one would be the conclusion. So then 2 through 5 will be Ashram Dharma, and then 2 through 6 will be Ashram Dharma, and then 7 through 11 will be Varna Dharma. Understand? So the book's divided basically half. So to establish, then we have to define the what is the connection between this topic and the Lord, right? Because the aparavidya, it only has validity when it's connected to the Lord, right? Because paravidya means transcendental knowledge, so apara means not transcendental, but it's connected with para. Right? So that means it is material knowledge, right? Yes, spiritual knowledge, material knowledge. Avidya means that knowledge which is not connected to the Lord, right? So it's knowledge, right? It means, in other words, we will consider something knowledge when it's facts or someone's conclusion based on facts, right? We'll consider that knowledge. But the point is if that knowledge, those facts itself and the conclusions don't connect to the Lord, it's called avidya, ignorance. Right? So it can be correct or true according to the modern context. But because it doesn't connect to the Lord, it's not actually true. Right? Because one's understanding, one's perspective and all that will be temporary. So it's not given as knowledge, it's given as ignorance. Right? So as aparavidya, it must establish itself in connection with the Lord. So then the first chapter does that. As we will see also, the last chapter does that. Right? So the first chapter is establishing that the Lord, due to his own desire, he's not forced. Right? This is something that comes up in Karma Mimamsa. Because a living entity wants something and performs the proper activity, the Lord has to give the result. But here it shows that, no, he's independent. He can do what he likes. And so he expands the material world, right, for the reformation of the living entity. So his expansion of this play, of the world, then establishes all the situations in which one can perform activity. Right? Because it's through activity that you elevate yourself or degrade yourself. But to perform an activity needs situation. So therefore all the situations that are there, from the lower planets to the higher planets, from, you know, the mountains to the plains, from, you know, whatever is there, anything that influences that, all the different stars, the planets, you know, your different things that create the weather and all the different situations, the seasons, all that's created so that you will do something. Right? Does that make sense? Like when it's cold, you'll do one thing. If it's hot, you'll do another thing. If it's pleasant, then another thing. Does that make sense? Right. So, that being established, then, having created the situations, then the Lord creates what is right and wrong. So there actually is a correct right and a correct wrong. Right? So the first level of a right and wrong will be that the mechanics of something, just how the situation interacts with itself and transforms. Right? That'll be the first situation, because you have something, you deal with it in a particular way, it will transform the way you want. So that's the first law of what's right and wrong. But that's not what the Dharma Shastra is concerned with. Dharma Shastra is concerned with, are you supposed to be doing that? You know what I'm saying? Because you can convert something, but are you the one that's supposed to be converting it? You know, just like the car, you get in it, you put in the key, you turn the wheel, you push the pedals, it moves around. But the question is the 8-year-old kid supposed to be doing that? You understand? So the mechanics of how the car works, that's generic. Right? So one is not getting in trouble because the mechanics are there. One gets in trouble is, are you supposed to be dealing with the mechanics? Does that make sense? So that's the uniqueness of the Dharma Shastra. It establishes what one's nature is, therefore what are the duties one should be performing. Right? So that's what's important about this. So in this, it's dealing with the facts. Dharma means facts. Dharma means what is the nature. It's not an interpretation of the nature, it is the nature. Right? Dogs don't fly, it's a fact. Right? Sometimes cats fly if you swing them enough by the tail, but other than that, they don't fly. Right? Birds fly. Does that make sense? So the point is that it's not a matter of interpretation. It's not a matter of our feeling. There's laws. It's just the way it is. It's just facts. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you're standing there, you know, on the corner of some place, in some city, and then you say, you know, oh, here, you're on, you know, what is it, 43rd and Broadway, and you could say, you know, in New York City. But no, but why are you saying that it has to be this? Why can't we be, you know, in Champs-Élysées in Manila? You know, do what we like, you know. This is, you know, why do you have to restrict? No, it's a fact. It's not a matter of how you interpret it. It's a fact. The point is what you want to do with that. You know? You can say, what am I doing here, and walk to another street, or do something there, or, you know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. Is that whatever it is that is to be done, it's not a matter of changing the facts, it's a matter of how those facts can be applied. Right? So Dharma Shastra is establishing you in your particular conditioned state, what are your options? Right? And Sanatana Dharma establishes you as the soul. Therefore, of those pious activities, they should be connected to the Lord. Right? So in other words, Sanatana Dharma is establishing you should do service to Krishna in whatever situation you're in. Dharma Shastra then establishes in that situation what are the things you could do. Right? Because they're only going to recommend pious activities. So the pious activities engage in the Lord's service. Right? Does that make sense? So the two aren't opposed to each other. Right? The natural, because you're going to do an activity, just like, okay, you're in Nanda Bhavan, okay? And you're in the kitchen. Okay? So what is Mother Yashoda going to do? Cook, right? That's her duty. Right? Let's say Nanda Baba's in the kitchen. What's he going to do?
Eat.
Yes. you understand? So everyone's going to have something that they do. So the point is it's defined by the situation of who you are. So the Dharmashastra is only mechanically formalizing this according to your conditioning. But it's only a reflection of the natural form of, in the spiritual world, the situation they're in and the nature they have. Therefore, it defines what service they'll do for Krishna. But here we have the choice that in those situations we might not use it for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So Sanatana Dharma means you'll use it for Krishna. Dharma simply implies what are the options available. And Adharma means going against the nature, either your nature or the situation or that combination. Does that make sense? So that's what Adharma is. So therefore, that being established, then he gives to be able to understand the full range, and there's 25 topics that define what is Dharma, what's the nature of everything. Because that's the idea of Varnashram, to establish what is the nature of everything in the creation. Right? And so your position within that and your relationship with it. Right? And in this first chapter then, and how all that relates to the Lord. So if the Lord's created everything, that means everything's related to Him. So that means everything can be connected to the Lord. Right? But that everything means what is the everything for you, not everything for someone else. Does that make sense? You know, just like when you say, no, but everybody thinks, it means you're everybody, not someone else's everybody. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Okay, then you're oh, that's that. Okay. Then when we get into ashram dharma, then we are establishing and then having established that, now how do we know this? Right? Because Dharma has been established by the Lord. All the creation is there, what's right and wrong is established. So how do we know what is what? So that is authority. That's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that is always to be accepted. It's not a question of we accept or don't as we please. No. The Shabda is always accepted. Now it's just a matter of what we want to... Turn on the fan. Yeah, I guess you could turn on the fan now. It's not going to blow away. Yeah, you know which one it is? The top on the right. Very top, very right. Yeah, that was it. Not moving very fast.
That was the light back.
The very last one.
Yeah. That's it.
It's moving.
Yeah. It's a little bit of smoke there. That'd be good. You have the class and everybody's there, but you disappeared because he should have been. Yeah, no, leave that. That's the only one. No, leave it on.
Maharaj, could you also say that only Shabda is to be accepted?
Only Shabda, yeah. So means the guru and sadhu, their direction is based on Shabda. Right? So when we say Shabda, then we mean the Shastra. Right? Like that, because anything else is based on that. So then, So that is always accepted. So it's not a question of not accepting. It's a matter of understanding what is meant and how to apply it. That there's some discussion, but there's no question of not accepting it. Right? The Shastra says we're not the body, we're the soul. It's not a matter of discussion. It's a matter of discussing how to understand it. But it's not a matter of discussing whether the Shastra is right or not. No, Shastra is always correct. But then how that applies to you and your situation, that's what he discussed. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. So someone who accepts the authority of Shastra, then they are considered proper association. Those who don't accept the authority of Shastra, they're considered not good association. So they're avoided. You know, it means other than what is your normal, you know, social mechanics like that, especially in occupational duties. You may have to associate with so many people that aren't ideal. But in ashram duties, you can pick and choose. You're not obliged to associate with those who are not of a character that you appreciate. Right? Okay. Having done that, so now we've established what's dharma. Right? The laws of God have been established, and what's right and wrong, you know, in how we deal with those laws, right? Then that is defined by Shastra, and the person who is going to be typically going to be able to practice that, you know, and then in this case also discussing who can teach it, is someone who has gone through the lifestyle established by the Shastra, means the samskars, right? And so that through that purification, then one will be able to very comfortably live that authorized lifestyle, right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So therefore, the most important of all the samskars is the spiritual initiation, right? But these others help a lot, you know, seeing that generally people are distracted by the material conditioning like that. So then basically the samskars, their purpose is they create an auspicious environment in which one can perform one's duties. You know, have the proper peaceful mind, stable, good developed intelligence, proper mood and relations to others, proper ability to understand things, to study, right? These are all the elements of samskar, right? Then someone who has done that, then they take up, the first thing is then brahmacharya, right? So then the brahmacharya, then the idea is through that, then one gets properly trained, right? Because that's the beginning of the whole Vedic culture, is that to live the culture, since it is a very sophisticated culture, there needs to be training, right? That's why the educational system is there. Means previously, you know, in all cultures, the education was to make you part of society. Modern, somehow or another, is just to make you part of the workforce. Right? The lifestyle is not important. Right? Means, in other words, generally the people who are very interested that you become part of the workforce, they're the ones that have a more conservative lifestyle. They have a lifestyle. Like that. Does that make sense? But, you know, that would be kind of boring, you know, very medieval like that. So we have the intellectuals are fortunately there to inspire us to, you know, see some other, you know, romantic elements within, you know, the socially dysfunctional system that's there, because there is no lifestyle. So they somehow or another put a nice little sugar coating on so you don't notice there isn't one. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea is that you become trained. That's how you're able to function within the system. Because one of the major things we see within you know, human history is the basically, you know, xenophobic mood that's there in every culture. And then within that, it's stratified. The rich don't like the poor don't like the rich, the intellectuals don't like anyone else, no one else likes them, no one likes the leaders, no one likes the businessmen. I mean, you think about it, you know, the intellectuals, okay, you know, they don't bother anybody, but, you know, what's the use? Politicians, you know, who likes them, right? Businessmen, you know, they're the ones that are, you know, making all the trouble. Artists, I mean, it's very hard to get along with. You know, you just go on and on and on. So, what's left?
Me.
Yeah, you know. And someone's unmarried, you know, why is he unmarried? He's married, then it's this, you know, it just goes on and on. So everybody has a problem with everybody else. So the Vedic system is there that everybody can get along. So without training, then the system where you're stratified into your area, even there it's very hard to get along with anybody, let alone a system that accommodates everybody. So it takes training. So that's what the brahmacharya life is for. So that one can be trained how to be human. Now, because human has a wide range. Does that make sense? If you in other things, is, you know, it's like dogs, they get along with each other, basically, you know, to what degree their culture, you know, dictates. But they don't like cats, they don't like anything else, and they don't even like dogs outside of their own, you know, dogness, you know, like that. If they're a big dog, then they don't like little ones. They're little ones, they don't like big ones, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So it doesn't accommodate much. So you're having to make it so that you can work with this group. Therefore, the first thing is study of the Shastra, because that's where you're going to get the definition of what is Dharma, what's the proper activity, right? That you need a teacher, right? So that's been described before, someone who accepts that the Shastra and lives by that. That's the teacher, right? Then you have to be clean, right? Because if by cleanliness, then there's motive goodness, so that's uplifting. Dirt is, you know, ignorance, so then it's degrading, right? There has to be respect, otherwise how do you deal with anybody else, right? You know, that was always a difficulty, is in most of your non-Vedic concepts of respect, it's always one way. There's somebody is respectable and somebody's junior, that's just it. Guy who's respectable, he is just from all angles respectable, and for the who's junior is just junior from all angles, right? So therefore the one who's in the respectable position, he feels he can say anything about anything. No, he's respectable because of certain qualities, so he has something to say about that. Other areas, no. Does that make sense? Yes.
So this is why modern man is so afraid of authority, because of this misconception.
Yeah. Well, also you have the element that you want to be authority, because you want to be God. That's, you know, yeah, highest authority. And so everybody else is competition. Yeah. So the Vedic is how everybody can have a position. Because in the modern, it's kind of like you get it and nobody else does. You know, who's willing to take that extra, you know, how you say, step, they move up and everybody else gets left behind. You know, so it's not a sustainable system as far as social. It works economically, and it may work for, you know, a short time, but eventually it doesn't. Everybody gets chewed up in the process. But so then you have the ability to understand what are the items of respect, and to respect everybody for whatever it is they have, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Maybe you are, you know, the political authority, but someone else will say is a your administrative authority, but someone else is a business authority. So that means, yes, the administration is higher than business, but that doesn't mean you tell them how to do business. So you don't know what is business. You know administration. He knows business. Right? So that means when it comes to business, you listen to him. But the problem is because he sees business as supreme, therefore he'll do things in business that administratively wouldn't be allowed. That's why administration is higher. You know what I'm saying? And just the same, administration, there's so many things you do, but then the intellectual platform, there's so many things that shouldn't be done. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that each one that's higher controls the one that's below that. Right? Just to make sure that the system works. But it doesn't mean that in that area, that person's not the authority. It's just what area of authority has more weight than another. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like amongst businessmen, someone who's older may have a lot of experience, and someone who's younger, generally speaking, would have less. So age would naturally is one of the elements of respect. But someone could be so much more clever, so in a shorter time he's done so much more. So, you know, he's only 30 years old, but he's, you know, very wealthy. You know what I'm saying? So he's more wealthy than the person who's older. You know, or maybe he's not as wealthy, But the point is he's gotten more wealth in a shorter time than the one who the other guy's 60 years old and he's a billionaire. But the guy's only 25, but he's almost a billionaire. That means he has better knowledge and understanding of the system. So that means that would be respected by the older, but he'll respect the older one because of his experience. He's seen a wider range of applications of economics. Does that make sense? So this ability to be able to respect each other for what they have, that's what's lacking, generally speaking, in your non-Vedic systems. So the Vedic system has that. The Vedic system, then, so that takes training. So that means respect itself as a quality has to be developed. Right? Then sense control. If you don't control the senses, how do you focus on what you're doing? Right? Because otherwise, if the senses are running off, then you're not focused and engaged in doing what it is you're supposed to be doing. Does that make sense? Yes.
Or is it the envy that presents a barrier to offering respect to others?
Envy? Yeah, I mean, it can be. But it can also just be that, you know, lack of knowledge also, just you don't know the importance of it. You know, most people do something wrong because of ignorance. But it may be they know, but they just don't care due to envy. You know, so you just have to see. But the point is it's going to be basically bad qualities, or let's say lack of good qualities, that's going to be the problem. So brahmacharya means how to develop those good qualities, right? And then everything, as we started off in the first chapter, you have a situation, but it's what you do with the situation, right? So it's by doing, that means it's an effort. So only through effort, then there's results. So that means then the brahmacharya has to be trained in actual work ethic. If he can't work, then how will he get anything done, right? But you can't work if you don't have knowledge, you don't have sense control, you don't have respect. Right, you don't create the proper clean environment. Does that make sense? It's not based on knowledge of shastra. So all these things, when they're there, then he'll be able to properly deal with society. One, of course, be Krishna conscious, but he'll be able to function in society of others who are Krishna conscious or not. Right? Then he gets married. Marries one of equal nature. Yes.
Dealing with education and respect. We see so many schools in modern society which that's the main problem. So they
yes.
have this behavior managerial system which really doesn't address the topic.
Yeah. Because they're not dealing, means the problem with the modern education is it's not dealing with lifestyle. Right? It's only dealing with occupation. But even there, if someone values materially progressing, right, then you can point out to them that their material progress is based on their material endeavor. And that endeavor is based on their knowledge and qualities. And so that's based on what they do today. So if someone was actually intelligent, you could get them to understand that and at least be able to pay attention and behave properly to get that occupational, you know, like that. But for many, it's not important because lifestyle is more important than occupation. So if the lifestyle is not good, there's dissatisfaction there. Why does one want to create facility for a lifestyle you're not satisfied with? You know what I'm saying? In other words, the man who satisfies the lifestyle or can see a way he can change that is willing to work to either maintain or adjust it. But if someone is dissatisfied in their lifestyle and doesn't, so why would one maintain it or if he doesn't see a way he can change it? You know, so then they're uninspired, right? So it's a matter. Being uninspired, you know, it's just, why would they work? So why pay attention? So the difficulty is that they're not addressing lifestyle. Does that make sense? And just to make someone into a consumerist, that's not good enough, because then, okay, so now he's willing to, okay, he hasn't been paying attention, he hasn't been, you know, dealing with his math properly, he hasn't seen the importance of it. But now that you've explained all this to him, now he gets right down, he learns his math nicely, and so now he can make the proper calculations on, you know, what's the profit, a loss margin on you know, his selling of drugs. And, you know, and what, you know, age groups and communities, what, you know, what demographic, you know, best works with the drugs, so which area of town, and then how far that away is, and then, you know, all these different things that require so many numbers. So now he can do it nicely. You understand? So it's, the problem is that it still hasn't addressed lifestyle. All it is you made him inspired to, okay, see how to use that occupation. So they're taking it for granted, unspoken, that someone's going to actually, in their own personal life, lead basically a secular Christian lifestyle. Right? Like that. And so in that way, then they'll be good people. But the point is what defined that lifestyle was religion. So how are you going to get the lifestyle without the religion, and the school's only teaching, economics, that's all. Does that make sense? You know, because if you don't know, like let's say the kid can't read, right? What is the parents or other adults, what's their anxiety? They won't get a job. It's not like he can't read, so how is he going to be able to read the classics or read the Bible or read the Bible? That's not their anxiety. I have never to date in 30 years heard one parent make that complaint. It's always occupational. Right? So this is the difficulty, is that it's not based on lifestyle. They're taking it for granted lifestyle will automatically happen. But what they forget before is the lifestyle was taught in the school. Like that. So that's why, therefore, the Vedic system is, the emphasis is on lifestyle. Because that, anybody can become good at. Whether you're very intelligent or not, or whatever is your nature, you can properly learn what is an appropriate lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? You can be a very pious man even though you're just a very simple person. Right? Then according to your ability, then you learn occupation. Does that make sense? Because before, the person could be, let's say he's just a blacksmith. Right? But he's culture, you know, he's well read, he dresses properly, he deals with people properly. He'll be accepted as a gentleman. Right? You know, he may not move in that very high social economic status, but he'll be accepted as a cultured member of the community, upstanding member of the community. So if he has something to say, people will actually listen to it. Right? He gives witness to something, they'll take him seriously. You understand? So that was, you know. But this is what's not understood in the modern context, is that it's the lifestyle, it's the character that makes the person, not the occupation, not the money. You know what I'm saying? If money made the man, then there'd be a lot of nice people on the planet.
Because you previously, the Catholic religion was obligatory in all schools. Now it's been removed because freedom. And even then, the Catholic didn't have a lifestyle in the first place.
But why is it you remove religion, that's freedom? Why don't they remove like math or geography or, you know, biology, you know, thing, all the stuff that kids hate? Why don't they remove that? That would be freedom. You know, if you remove religion, the kids really don't care. It's the adults who are worried about whether the kids learn religion. But if you remove, you know, math and geography and that, the kids would feel, now that's liberation, you know, like that. So when they talk freedom, you know, why do they, Well, you know, why is it always from that perspective, you know? Not going to school, that would be freedom.
Remove everything.
Yeah, like that. You just have permanent summer vacation. Probably Christmas would be better, you get more presents, right?
Yeah,
so the thing is, but then even there, the teaching religion, much of the time it's only the faith and the ritual. It's not actually the philosophy, so no one knows why they're doing it. So that's the problem, is faith and ritual you can change. But the, you know, the transcendental facts, those don't change. It doesn't. Who's that? Okay, so that being there, then the person can get married, because now he has the training to be part of the system properly. And even if he doesn't, as a brahmachari, then he will, you know, do his duties, and wherever he fits in, you know, on the smaller scale, it will, you know, it'll go nicely for him, and everybody will be very comfortable, very inspired. Okay, but. Yeah, but then within that, for the grihastha, the most important element is marrying somebody of equal nature, right? Because the point is that there's unlimited natures, so it's a matter of what nature you can work with. You know what I'm saying? The idea is that how to establish a working relationship. Because the point is that if one doesn't have material desire, then one cooperates with others simply for, you know, the basic necessities and then spiritual development. One has material desire, it still requires cooperation. Right? And so then if there's no cooperation, then how will it work? It will function. So therefore the Vedas are making this point very clear. Because someone endeavors because the conscious, how you say, he's inspired. Right? But that means then you have an understanding of the situation, what you can gain from it. But if someone doesn't know who they are, and therefore doesn't know how to analyze the situation, and therefore what they can gain from that situation, they won't be inspired. So if they're not inspired, they do nothing. And if they do nothing, they don't prosper. So then they'll be frustrated, and then it just creates a whole problem. So that's why the equal nature is important. Because if the nature is equal, the child will be equal. If the natures are different, the child will be a combination of those two differences. How do you put that together? Yes.
What does Chanakya Panda mean when he says, you know, accepting gold from a dirty place?
It says excellent wives, learning, knowledge of the law, the rules of purity, good advice, and various arts may be acquired from anybody. Means, in other words, what's real can be taken from anywhere. But equal mean by nature. You know, so it doesn't mean that. Where you find that equal nature, it doesn't necessarily mean that the situation was equal. You know what I'm saying?
Could you explain a little more, please?
Explain a little bit more.
What that means?
The prince and Cinderella.
Okay.
Right, their situations aren't the same,
but
their natures are.
Okay.
You understand? But you can see it's based on the qualities,
okay.
Right? He being, you know, prince, and he has his duties, he performs, he's noble. She also takes care, does everything, is very selfless. So there's an equalness of nature there. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just based on attraction, because one can get attracted to anything. You know what I'm saying? That's why there's a science called advertisement. Because they figured out, technically, they make anybody attracted to anything depending on how you present it. Does that make sense? So that's why then one must know what is nature. then that nature defines what will work together, because it's the ability to work together that makes it prosperous, not the environment in which, in theory, there could be, but there isn't. You know, I'm sorry. Okay. So then that's the basic principle. And then from that, then he performs all those, in other words, everything else is an expansion on those things. You know, what work he does, you know, his respect for things. So that respect means he also has to respect his position of whatever he is, and don't do something that you can't do. You know, just like I was saying, the Brahman doesn't go into a place that he can't see, because how is he going to deal with it? But a Kshatriya might, because that's what he does, is things like stuff like that. Yeah, so, you know, so that's the point, is that you're only expanding on those six. It's just that you're applying it, the Grihastha Ashram means you're applying those six into a very wide range of activities, right? That makes sense? And then having done that, then you have the nature of, means you have what is the Varnashram system. You know, how one's situated, what is one's occupation. So then that's defined. But then you also have what's the nature of women, right? So that itself has to be defined, right? Because within that context, then there's certain dealings that don't make sense if you're looking at it generally from an occupational standpoint, right? You have a social situation, because you can look at ashram as just social, you know, the situation that's there, and then how economically you maintain that. But the position of women, it deals in a different category. It's not based on the mechanics of how endeavor gets you fruit. Just, does that make sense? In other words, you're not transforming the seeable. You have to transform what's unseen. Right, the transformation of the experiential rather than transformation of the physical. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. This is the problem.
That's why we have this class.
You understand, for the man, it's you have something physical that's there. You deal with it in the appropriate physical way, it transforms physically into what you want. Does that make sense? There's no emotion involved. But with women, it's the transformation of the emotions that actually gets things done. It's a completely different system. Compatible, but totally different. Right? Just like, let's say, the nature that you want to build a car, and you want to build a road. The engineering, they're very different. What they're made out of is very different. You know, what you use to create them is very different, but the two are compatible. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point. Is so that emotional element, that then has to be brought into consideration. So there's certain things that you just can't do. You know what I'm saying? It means, you know, you're there, you're trying to get the machine to work. You know, you've tried everything, it doesn't work, so you pick up a huge wrench and then, you know, start banging on it with some, you know, how you say, choice vocabulary. And sometimes it starts. Yeah. Yeah, okay. But you can't do that with women. It's not going to work.
It has been tried.
Yeah, so the point is because you're working not on the mechanics aren't based on the adjustment of the physical, it's the adjustment of the emotional. So that's why then women in the Vedic are always, after describing everything, then they're defined separately. Because all the duties that were defined there are common for the men and women. But then there's consideration of the women that are different than all of this. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, then it makes things work nicely. If it's not understood, then it works less nicely. Okay. So now, having performed all his duties, with the idea that whatever opportunity is there, he sees according to his duty, so it's pious. And then it's supposed to be seen in how to connect that to the Lord. Right? Then, having connected it to the Lord, then that will be purified. So that naturally brings one to the point of vanaprastha, right? So the vanaprastha means one who has gone through the family life, and having gone through it, he's seen that he's made his endeavor, he's gotten the results, but they don't give the satisfaction of the spiritual endeavor, right? Because the spiritual is eternal. And the temporary, the material, no matter how good it is still temporary. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it doesn't matter if, you've gone down to the little guy on the side of the road and paid a few bucks and gotten yourself something to eat. You've gone into one of these restaurants where, you know, it's 3,000 bucks a plate. It's still, in 15 minutes, you're full and the experience is over. It's still temporary. It's not that, no, his cost, 1,000 times more than what you ate did, so that means it lasts 1,000 times longer. No, it's exactly the same length of time. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, whether you're sleeping on a bunch of hay or you're sleeping on a fancy bed, it doesn't matter. You know, when it's time to get up in the morning, you got to get out of bed. That's it. It's over. Does that make sense?
Prabhupada gives an analogy with, if you drink milk on a cup of gold or a plate of the milk, is the same.
Yes, 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 that's. Yeah. I think there was that one, I can't remember her name, also famous society girl that someone came to see, but the arrangement was made by his wife. Because he was so enamored by this lady. So the wife went and made the arrangement, but she said but she didn't know how to pay, so she said, I'll just serve, like that. But because this was, one of the big society girls, the top level, so they're very intelligent, very cultured. So then she said, no, you just bring your husband, we'll take care of it. So they brought husband, and then she arranged everything, cooked and all this. And then all the preparations, she put the same preparation in an iron pot and in the gold pot. So when she brought it out, he had double of everything. So he's looking at it, and then he figures out everything's doubled. But why? Why would you do that? And then when he asked the question to the lady, she looked at him and said, yes, that's the question, why? It's the same vegetable, whether it's in the iron pot or in the gold pot. So the feminine experience is the same, whether it's your wife or it's me. So why, you're the one that's made doing this. And so then he understood. So then, just the same. So that's what the Grihastha Ashram is for, is that one understands is that there is no advantage, there is no, you try all these things and, whatever you try, then it doesn't work out, You know what I'm saying? You have your, cheapo, cotton dhoti, then you get one nicer cotton dhoti with a nicer border, and then there's guys with bigger borders, and then there's silk ones with borders, right? And then we're not even going to get into saris here. Right? So you get into that, and you think of just, if I just had one of those, I'd be happy. And then when you have one of those, if I had a few more, and then, what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It doesn't end. So that's the point, is that you learn, is it doesn't matter what you have, what you do with it. it doesn't actually adjust your happiness. That's vanaprastha. Right? And so vanaprastha then lives a very simple lifestyle, trying to reduce. Means, in other words, he's made this great endeavor to create facility. Now he makes the endeavor to reduce facility. Yes.
But this would also be brahmacharya.
Yeah, it's brahmacharya. Means you brahmacharya, means all four orders are brahmacharyas. Mm. It's just a matter of how they're applying it. The brahmacharya lives simply, and you know, he doesn't have the sense of ownership. Like that. The grihastha has a sense of ownership, but he's supposed to still be using this for Brahman. The vanaprastha, but he's trying to expand his ownership. The vanaprastha, it's his cottage, right? The brahmacharya, it's not his cottage, you know, it's a guru's cottage. But the vanaprastha is his cottage, but he's reducing it down from a fancy house into a little cottage.
So in...
You understand? Yeah. So everybody's a brahmacharya. That's why brahmacharya is the first thing.
Mm.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
like, let's say you go to school, you learn language. Now, whether you're a writer or a journalist or an editor or a printer, you need to know language. Those are just various applications of the same thing. So brahmacharya is the basic, you know, social building block. You have that, then everything else can be.
So entering grihastha is not necessarily because you think it will increase your happiness.
Means there's the idea, means if it's in its proper element, means you technically know it won't, but the realization's not there. So therefore, with that knowledge, you go through it and see by, in other words, you haven't learned by hearing.
Mm.
And you see all the other grihasthas, you haven't learned by seeing. So now you're supposed to learn by going through it yourself.
Yeah. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have many very exalted personalities with grihasthas. They didn't get it? Or?
No, there it's... means... You have the other element, is it doesn't matter what the situation is. You have another aspect. We're talking this for more application of ourselves and overall how they'll view it anyway. But it's a matter of, you have facility, then you engage that in the Lord's service. But to have all that facility, you use that facility as a grihastha. You don't have the facility, then what's the need? In other words, the Vedic system would be, you're, most of the time, it means you go to the study under the teacher. You know, it comes to the point where one has finished one's vow. Now, if one has a house to go back to, there's facility and this and that, one would generally do that. But if there's not, then he would just remain a brahmacharya. You know what I'm saying? If he got an inheritance, he has facility money, he'd use that for the Lord. So he'd get married. But if he doesn't, then why get married? You know what I'm saying? The prince, he has a kingdom to go back to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so that's the point is this, it's there, so therefore. But we're looking at it from where we're, you know, making our own choices, so therefore. And for them, so it doesn't matter what, if it's engaged in the Lord's service, it doesn't matter. If you look at it, basically most everybody in Brudge is married.
Yeah,
so therefore that's not the problem. The problem is that here, we think all this facility will make us happy.
Yes, for me.
Right, yeah. So then if one thinks I'm getting married, I'll be happy. That's not going to work. Right? In other words, marriage is the situation I would be comfortable in engaging my abilities in the Lord's service. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's that he's comfortable in the association of women. He's comfortable with money and dealing with the social interaction. So he'd be okay there, right? But someone else who has, not that he's uncomfortable with it, because that just means you have to remove whatever is causing the problem. But he doesn't have any interest in economics or being in family life, so then he'd just remain a brahmacharya. Right? Does that make sense? So there's slightly different... You know, whereas that, you know, he hates women, he should be a brahmachari. He's totally attached to women, he should get married. No, it's not exactly the Vedic concept.
None of those would work.
Yeah, no, they don't. Yeah, they don't work. Okay, so Okay, so then that's vanaprastha. So he reduces everything down, and then he can remain in that position like that until the end of his life, or having studied and everything like this, then he can take sannyas, right? And so sannyas means he's dealt with, he has the fundaments, he's dealt with the facility, he's dealt with the not facility, and so for him it doesn't really matter what there is facility or not, like that. Does that make sense? If it's there, he uses it. If it's not there, he doesn't use it. Right? Brahmachari means there is no facility. Grihastha means there's only facility. Vanaprastha means you make sure there's no facility. Right? The sannyas just means you don't care if there's facility or not. So if it's there, you use it. If it's not there, does that make sense? So that's the idea. Because the idea is that there's nothing here that will make you happy. So it doesn't matter what you deal with, it won't make you happy. Does that make sense?
And the difference between sannyas and Babaji is compared to the society, that the sannyasi is playing a role in society, or?
From this morning's discussion.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
Yes, because then there's the element of authority and this and that, and if they don't deal properly, then you can say something. You know, to establish the proper thing. But the Babaji, he's insulted. He doesn't have to say anything. It means traditionally a sannyasi also would bother. Mm. But the thing is that you do have the option that socially it could be used. That was the yeah. It means people tend to listen. Mm. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you walk down the road. Right? And people are coming the other way. And they kind of look at you, they don't know who you are, and they kind of look at you, and this and that, but, you know, there's no, you know, like that. But once you cross, then they turn around and look. Yeah, and if there's pleats, they keep walking, and if there's not pleats, they offer obeisances. If they're not offering obeisances to you as a person, they couldn't care less. It's just simply whether you have pleats or not. So, you understand? So it's a social thing. It's not actually like that. Yeah. You know. Yeah. And that's for ones who worry about that. Nowadays, most people couldn't care less. Okay. And then, so the sannyas is supposed to be absorbed in. It's the main focus is on how you say. The philosophical content, right? Generally, ideally, minimally, the Brahman content and how the material world just doesn't, there is nothing to gain from it, right? So it's not so much a practice of control, it means of, how do you say, not controlling, but coercion of the sense, what would be?
Withdrawing?
Yeah, it's not so much a practice of withdrawing, it's more of an understanding that there's nothing there. You understand? So it's not, so the, in other words, the senses are just are not out that you have to withdraw them. They're just, it's already accepted that there's nothing there. So it's just a matter of the senses are engaged in whatever way that would be of service. You know, in other words, you're just taking a neutral state. Like that. Does that make sense? So that then brings one to the point of understanding that there's nothing of this, you know, that is there. Everything's connected to the Lord. Now that state of consciousness, as Gita is describing, that can be obtained by anybody. Right? In other words, you understand that everything is for the Lord's service, then it doesn't matter what varna or ashram you're in. That is sannyas by consciousness. But the Vedic system is that, of course, that's the ideal, that you'll come to that plane. But if not, then there's the aspect of, through practice, one can get to that. So there's a mechanical practice of brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. But the idea is that all four should actually be by mentality, sannyas, meaning that they're not, means sannyas means unattached to the results of the endeavor, not not unattached to, how you say, not attached to not performing an endeavor. Does that make sense? Because sometimes this thing, sannyasa is that I'm attached to not performing an activity. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? No. It's a matter of I perform the activity, the result's not for myself. You know what I'm saying? Let's say, brahmacharyas that, you know, have gone down to this program, and it's at night, you know, it's quite late when the program ended, but somehow or another some ladies found out about it. They also came to the program. So then after the program, you walk out onto the street there, and there's basically very few rickshaws. It's dark, the shops are closed, like that. So now, and, you know, the ladies didn't calculate that. You know, that's where, you know, it's mentioned before, don't come. But, you know, whatever it is, they came. So then you could look at it, okay, brahmacharis, so we don't deal with ladies, and so therefore the brahmacharis just walk off and leave the ladies there to figure it out for themselves, right? Or one, you know, is a grihastha, then, you know, he protects ladies and this and that because he's the man, like that. So he makes the arrangement, sends the ladies off, the ladies are so happy, and he's very, you know, being good like this. And that is the basis for future contact and interaction. Does that make sense? So that is the how you say, attraction and repulsion. But then you have the element is, no, the brahmacharis, you know, get the rickshaw guys, work out the price, send the ladies off, but there's, you know, it's not for interaction with the ladies and there'll be no follow-up on that. It's just that ladies are to be protected, therefore, then they take care of that. Does that make sense? You know, because they know how to deal with it. They didn't know. They didn't know any more than ladies, and what can you do? Like, you know, does that make sense? So it's a matter of there's nothing to gain from it like that. That's the, and then, okay. And so therefore, someone who deals with all that, so. Okay, and then he concludes that it's a matter of qualities. Okay, contentment, forgiveness, self-control, abstention from unrighteously appropriating anything, obedience to the rules of purification, coercion of the organs, wisdom, knowledge of the Supreme Soul, truthfulness and abstention from anger form the tenfold law. That being practiced, then, so, you know, one's, whatever one's looking for and the dealings with others, everything will go nicely. Right? You see these all go. Contentment means it's a matter of understanding, like that. Forgiveness, also it's understanding, self-control, right? That's the element of brahmacharya. Abstention from unrighteously appropriating anything, right? The sense, you know, nothing's theirs, you don't have. Obedience to the rules of purification, one is clean. You know, one's endeavor, coercion of the organs, controlling the senses, as you mentioned, wisdom, you know, knowledge of the Supreme, truthfulness, abstention from anger. So you can see it goes back to these basics that one learns as a brahmacharya. So those are just applied here. Okay. And so if one follows that, then his life will be perfect. Right? Then you have an occupation. But the occupation is to support this lifestyle. Because otherwise, if you don't have this lifestyle, what's the use? You know, that's the basis. So then the Varna Dharma then starts with the king. So the king has been established to take care of people. Right? Just like the Veda and Dharma being established, that the Brahmins are created to take care of that. The people have been created, so the king is created to take care of the people. Right? Cows are created, the Vaishya has been created to take care of the cows. Right? And because all of that requires assistance, therefore the Shudra's created to see that there's assistance in knowledge, in administration, and in economics. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So the whole system, it works very completely. So that's how the king is established, right? He is established because he'll take care of the people, right? And then to do that, he has to be able to understand, what's right and wrong and what's punishment. And punishment can't be based on just his emotions. Punishment has to be based on?
Shastra.
Yes, on the Shastra, what's correct. Because otherwise, if he doesn't control himself, he gets angry, he gets, not forgiving, all these things, the tenfold law, he can't function. Right? So the same thing is, you can't perform your occupational duties without the tenfold law. The tenfold law is required for varna, ashram, and for varna. So that's the Vedic system, is that the duties, it's not good enough that you made money, it's that how was it generated? Because how it's generated will be how it's used. Right? You can't use one method to generate something, it will give the reaction. Okay, so then understanding that, then he must function, learn under the Brahmins. So even though he's already studied, he's going to spend the rest of his life still studying and learning from and working under the Brahmins. Yes.
They're created to teach people how to get out of it all, or to teach the Brahmins?
Yeah, it means they are who teaches the Shastra.
So they maintain the system and help people to get out of it.
Yes, but they aren't the one that manage the system. No. That's the Kshatriyas.
Yeah.
But they're the one that know how the system works. Because in applying it, you may get distracted by, the endeavor.
Yeah.
So that's why that intelligence still has to be there, so one can see that properly. Yeah, so he's always going to study, learn ability, so he's always going to be behaving properly towards the Brahmins, even though he's the king, so he's the top of the country, but he behaves nicely towards the Brahmins, right? And he avoids bad character, bad endeavors, right? Love of pleasure, hunting, gambling, sleeping by day, sensuousness, excess with women, drunkenness, inordinate love for dancing, singing, and music, useless travel. Those are the tenfold set of vices spring from love of pleasure. Alright, and then from that produced from anger, then rumor mongering, being an informant, violence, treachery, envy, slander, unjust seizure of property, insulting others, and assault are the eightfold sets produced from anger. So he must give these up, like that. Otherwise, if he can't give them up, how will he be able to get his citizens? Right? It's understood the common man may have these, but how is the common man going to get rid of them unless the authority is, dealing with these? It doesn't mean that there may be a problem there, but he's working on it. He's actually trying to deal with it. Right? So if he's dealing with it, he can get his people to deal with it. If he doesn't have it, then they'll be even more inspired. But at least he can't ask his people to do something that he's not trying to do. And so after that, then he can't function the government without assistance. So he's going to establish his ministers, his prime minister, his Brahmins, all his office holders. Right? He has to have a place, so he's going to establish his fort. He has to have a family, so he'll get married. Right? So all these different things he'll get established first, and then he'll have his lifestyle. He'll get up in the morning. He has his sadhana. He has his dealing with the court. He still has, his family interactions. This is the interesting thing. He's the top of the country, but he eats lunch at home. He eats lunch and spends time with the family. Then he goes back to work. Right? Does that make sense? So it's like the idea is, I could, generally when you came, it means now you don't see as much, but before it was in India, even some cities in the West, the ground floor is all shops, but above is all residence. So traditionally before is, you know, you work downstairs and you lived upstairs. So it's just a matter of lunch, you just went upstairs and you go back downstairs to work. You know, like that. So, you know, yes.
Or somebody can be made to buy something even though they don't need it.
Right.
But you're saying that this king, administrator, he can only get somebody to work on their stuff if he's also working on that particular thing.
Right, yeah.
Why is that?
Because you're dealing with action-reaction, so if you're not working for developing a pure environment, how can you establish one? You know, if you don't have a work ethic, you can't get anyone else to work. Right? In other words, the person who is willing to work, then people like to work for him. But the person who doesn't want to do it, he knows that it's important to do it, he absolutely doesn't want to do it, and wouldn't do it himself, it's very hard to get others to do it. Does that make sense?
How are they able to... As a Brahmana, he can sometimes get people to do things, lazy, intelligent.
No, but it's not a matter of lazy, intelligent. That's how you manage it. We're talking about the mentality.
Okay.
We're not talking about the managerial skill. You know, it's just like this. Let's say you have a restaurant owner. If he's unwilling to wash pots, he can't get his pot washer to wash pots properly. But the point is if he's washing pots, who's running the business? So therefore, somebody washes the pots, he runs the business. Right? Does that make sense? So whatever it is you're able to do, it'll work better.
It's kind of like you step first and then the other person has
something to follow. Yeah, that's what leadership means. If you're going somewhere, they can follow. You're not going anywhere, how do they follow?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's okay. So basically, like that, then he spends his day, you know, in his duties and everything like that. So now, for tomorrow, we'll learn how the court runs, right? So we start, what is it, chapter 8. Okay? So that was the basic summary of the first 7 chapters.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai
Jainitai Govardhanam ki.
Jai.